Hello, hello. Welcome to Pilled, where you can join the masses of crypto pilled degens. And if you're not one of them, well, just you wait. I'm your host, Anisha Sankarneni, and this is Pilled. If you guys were around for part one of Chase's episode diving into DAOs, then you'd know that I did things a little bit differently this time, to split episodes into shorter, more digestible segments. Both part one and part two of Chase's session on DAOs are standalone episodes, but I highly recommend listening to part one to hear about DAO structure and some mental models to use when thinking about it. If you're not too familiar with what a DAO even is, I'd recommend going back to season one, episode one with Diana Chen, where we really go back to the basics of breaking a DAO down. Now, all that being said, in today's episode, we'll be chatting about moderation, onboarding, and offboarding in DAOs today, as well as touching on compensation and the benefit of transparency in this ecosystem. Just like with part one, I'll be dropping audio bookmarks to help navigate between sections in the show notes. And if you stick with us till the very end, you'll get to hear what Chase would pill us on that's not crypto, obviously, if she could choose anything in the world. For some context, we'll be jumping right in today to chat about how communities of many DAOs exist on Discord servers and what that can mean for the type of discourse and moderation that's possible on such a platform. Let's get to it. Another thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is DAOs are meant to be decentralized. Everyone who wants to join the community should have an opportunity to join the community. And a lot of the time, these DAOs and having Discord servers. So many DAOs, not all of them, some of them maybe start out in group chats, maybe some of them stay in group chats on Telegram or Twitter or what have you, but many of them do end up going to Discord. And I'm curious what your thoughts are around Discord as a platform for DAOs and maybe DAO tooling that is popping up in general, because oftentimes in Discord, you can get lost in the sea of noise. And there have been instances in which a given individual, or maybe multiple individuals within Discord, might just share their thoughts about the DAO or the proposals that the DAO has going very loudly. And the louder they are, almost squeaky wheel gets the grease. I've literally seen almost discordance ensue from certain individuals that make a lot of noise on the Discord platform. And that feels like it could cause issues down the line. And I'm curious to know whether that's just how communities and DAOs exist right now. And maybe that's not so much of a problem, or maybe there are ways to address it with moderation. What are your thoughts around using Discord as a tool for DAOs, and how DAOs have kind of addressed moderation and ensuring that everyone has a quote-unquote equal voice outside of just purely governance?
I think what's interesting about DAOs is, in this particular context, is that how value is created changes whose voice is incorporated into the conversation. And so when you're thinking about a DAO that's getting together to buy something, you're going to have a lot of that, because basically everyone is providing equal value initially, which is just the money up front. And so the community that you have has a say, but they don't necessarily have the context. You have to make sure that they have the buy-in. And I think what this highlights, whether you're doing something like that, where you're just, you're buying something, versus something like Index, which is building product together, regardless of what it is, I think a lot of that is dependent on onboarding and how you onboard people, and what access you give them as a result of that onboarding and your governance processes in general. So when you think about onboarding for any DAO, I think the major thing is creating context so that people can start providing value, and then also creating processes so that people know how to do that and they can see their own path. I think when it comes to governance in particular, a lot of talk is not always useful. You want to have discussions around governance conversations, but you want to also have action where people are saying, okay, I don't like this and I want to change this and I'm going to write a proposal for it. And if they get support from a lot of people, then cool. But I think a lot of this really depends on access, and it's going to change for every DAO. So it's really hard to gauge that. I think Discord is not the best place to have conversations, which is why you're seeing discourse used as a forum for mm-hmm. a lot of DAOs, which I think is
yes, absolutely
a little bit more helpful for productive discussion. I think has such a long way to go. And DAO onboarding has a long way to go too. So I think all of that is dependent upon a lot of different things. But as tooling gets better, we'll probably have better ways to make sure that the people who are contributing to the discussion have the context that they need, not just about what's going on, but also about the mission and vision and making sure that everyone is aligned on that. So there's a lot of work to be done, I think, in general on that.
Yes, I think all of us would agree that we are very early and we have a lot to figure out. But there's also a lot of potential for the future. So that's exciting. I guess you mentioned DAO onboarding, and I recently had a discussion with someone that referenced how does a DAO offboard a person too, who might be a core contributor that may no longer have the time or energy to stay as involved. So maybe we can dive into each of them individually, but would love to hear your thoughts on what are some good onboarding practices that you've seen? What are things that we as a community overall can encourage DAOs to consider when it comes to onboarding?
Yeah, Rafa wrote a really good piece on onboarding, I think, for Cabin DAO. And
yes, I can link that below for sure.
Yeah, he had a great perspective on onboarding, which was this idea of wayfinding and really helping people find their path. What I always like to say is starting to contribute to a DAO is uncomfortable because you don't know where you fit in. No one's telling you what to do. No one's reassuring you that you're on the right path. And part of that can be really uncomfortable to sit with for a bit. You also have to push yourself a little bit and believe in yourself, essentially, mm-hmm. believe that you're going to create value.
Absolutely.
And so I think a lot of onboarding is about acknowledging that, giving people the understanding that they need in order to start contributing. The way that I like to think about onboarding is thinking about essentially this feeling of ownership. How do you create it? And there are three psychological aspects of feeling ownership. Mm-hmm. The first is control. So that's this idea that you know how to assert what you want to do in this digital space, or the path to get there. You know how to contribute to governance, or you know how to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. The second piece is belonging, which is this idea that you start to feel like you belong in the community. And then the third is identity, which is this idea that you start to essentially say, I am a contributor to this thing. That actually makes up part of my identity. And that's an important aspect of this whole piece of who I am. And so I think when you think about those three pieces, really great onboarding does all of those things. It tells you how you can contribute and how you can actually be useful within the system. It makes you feel like you belong, and it makes you feel like this is something that can now be a part of who you are. When it comes to offboarding, I think there's really interesting questions there, particularly
yeah.
when you think about this idea of two different kinds of offboarding. The first is someone is not mission aligned, and it's actually a detriment to have them within the DAO, which is an interesting challenge that I think you're getting at in some ways, where there are some community members that might just not be contributing productively. How do you minimize the negative impact of those things? And then the second one is just that people get busy. How do you make sure that you have a smooth offboarding system? I think the first one is very much a social needing true moderation, where you have leaders that come in. And when I say leaders, again, leaderful organizations, but people mm-hmm. who are trusted by the community to have these discussions and say, hey, this is not really the way that we go about these conversations. Let's, you know, talk about this and see if we can find a better path forward. The second one, I think, is something we need to normalize a lot more, which is just that everyone in this ecosystem is incredibly busy. And so a lot of times people will commit to things that they can't actually deliver on. What's more interesting is that I think we need harder commitment protocols
yeah.
so that people don't overcommit themselves. I had Spencer Graham on my podcast to talk about how DAO House is doing this. So they're experimenting with having people commit for a certain amount of time to actually say, okay, I'm going to give 50% of my time for the next 2 months, and DAO House pays them accordingly for that. And so you have people doing harsher, not harsher, but hard commitments of saying, I'm actually going to do this, which
right.
I think forces people to do something. And then mm-hmm. when that 2 months is up, you have an opportunity to say, hey, I want to go explore something else. But I think we need to be much more open and honest about some of those things, and also help facilitate commitments Otherwise, we're in this weird state of people saying they're going to do stuff and then they don't do it. And no one can really blame them because they didn't really ever commit in a hard manner to it. So I think that's probably where things are going. But it's definitely something that I think we need to destigmatize, because that's the nature of DAOs. It's a little bit more liquid. And it's also going to force DAOs to think more about contributor churn. If we normalize that, then we can help DAOs figure out, okay, how do we keep contributors engaged and how do we create a really great environment for them to contribute where they actually want to stay? They're not just stuck in this weird in-between. So to me, that's the next evolution of offboarding.
That's incredible. Those are a lot of different things to think about. And I agree. I do also think there would be a benefit to having slightly stricter guidelines or expectations. At the end of the day, I think whether it's from onboarding or offboarding, any kind of relationship you have, your colleague or your community or whatever, it's about managing expectations and good communication. And I think scoping out what you have bandwidth for and maybe what you may be able to contribute and what that community might need or could use is really beneficial to have those conversations. And when I think about it, DAOs right now don't really have any kind of equivalent of an HR department. And I think there's pros and cons to that. But when I think specifically about onboarding and offboarding and a company, that might be something that HR would, you know, be involved with, and there might be stricter guidelines around that. I'm curious to see if anything of that nature ends up becoming part of the standard. Another thing related to this is when it comes to scoping out what a core contributor of a given DAO actually does, right? Whether it's what they do for the community and then in return what they may be compensated, whether that's in the form of social capital or tokens or fiat, or they're just volunteering their time. Oftentimes, there is not very much visibility into that. And especially if someone is joining a DAO for the first time and has never experienced anything like that, I think that can be a little bit difficult to navigate. I'm curious to know about what your experiences have been and what exposure to that you've seen and had regarding just the compensation. How does it work in DAOs most of the time now? Do you think that works? Do you think there should be changes to what the status quo is?
Yeah, again, I think this definitely depends on the type of DAO. So for DAOs that are product DAOs, DAOs that have raised capital, I think this is pretty, I don't want to say standard, because I don't think that anything in DAOs is standard yet.
Not
but for
yet.
DAOs that I contribute to, like Forefront or Index, the way that a lot of this works is core contributor payments are pretty straightforward. So you'll do a proposal that will essentially pass to either fund a working group and then fund the co-leads or leader of that working group, or you'll do, so I think that's how Index comp works. I'm not positive on that, so definitely don't quote me on that. But for something like Forefront, which is a little bit of a smaller DAO, the way that it works is we have voted to bring on core contributors who are thinking full-time about Forefront or part-time about Forefront, but enough of their time where it's something where we want to give them a consistent salary. So that is pretty straightforward. What I think is weirder and gets harder is contributors who are providing value not consistently enough to give them a salary. And so there are a couple ways that you can manage this. One of them is on a case-by-case basis for all of the different things that they've done. So for a lot of contributors in Index, for example, you actually just turn in a spreadsheet at the end of every month that gives a list of everything that you've done for Index. And then we have a compensation committee that will decide on what makes sense to pay people. And then you can always, if you don't agree on what you've been paid, basically say, hey, I think I should have been paid this much instead. That's shifting a little bit actually now, where if you take on tasks, you touch base with the lead for whatever working group that's for and say, hey, is this something I can get paid for? Yes or no? If yes, cool, let's continue with it, just to make sure that people are having expectations set, to your point about clear expectations. So I think that's where things get a little bit more tricky. There's a lot of experimentation happening. And with all the stuff that I use as an example for something like Index, we're actually changing structure a little bit for Index 2.0. So it's weird and hard to say this is how this works because all of this is changing. So I think that it's actually a little bit harder for people that are a bit more flexible with contributions. For product DAOs that have a treasury, where I think things get challenging is actually for DAOs that spring up as part of a movement in the very early stages, where it's like a startup where you're working for equity and you are not getting paid as a core contributor. Because a lot of times for these DAOs, whether it's because you're buying an NFT that came up or whatever, you don't have a bunch of money that you're sitting on that is for paying core contributors. You have it to buy whatever the thing is. And that's the primitive that I think a lot of people are exploring now with DAOs. And so when that happens, you're in the super early stages of a startup where, again, not enough money to do that. You just have an idea. You're working towards that idea. And then slowly, if that continues, you can bring people onto the core team and pay them. I think PleaserDAO is a good example of this, where they've started, I believe, actually bringing people on full time, or at least exploring that, to manage their Doge community and all of that different stuff. So I think it's actually quite similar to startups trajectory there, but comp is definitely not a solved problem. And then you have tools like Coordinate, which essentially allow you to retroactively pay people based on what you think they contributed after a given period. There are a lot of cool experiments happening, but there's no good standard yet.
Got it. That's really good to know, because that's been my experience as well. This is purely a theoretical question to get your opinion about it. In Web3, we promote a lot of transparency, and we say that we want high visibility into everything, that we care a lot about community and ensuring, you know, shared ownership and shared responsibility. And part of that, I think, could be encouraged that would be aligned with such values might be something like, whether it's internal or external, some version of a Glassdoor for compensation within DAOs, because I think there's a lot of discussion about how compensation currently works within DAOs, or how much certain contributors are getting paid for what type of work. A lot of the time, the different tasks that people are being paid for may have never even happened before within that DAO. It might be the first time a DAO starts a podcast, and whoever is running that podcast for the DAO may be compensated. But if it's the first episode for a podcast, there is no standard for what they should, quote unquote, be paid. For whoever starts maybe a second podcast, they have that precedent of the first podcast compensation to go off of. But those kind of decisions and that thought process that's involved with how much do we pay this contributor for the work that they put out over this time period, what are the different factors that kind of go into it? I think all of that is done very much behind closed doors, and obviously it varies from DAO to DAO. And I think personally, if I was a core contributor in a DAO, much how we say within the Web2 company world, it's good to know what a compensation band might be for a given role, or are men being paid the same as women, or at what level of seniority are you paid X? If I was a contributor in a DAO, I think it would be really cool to be able to have some visibility into those kinds of decisions. And I don't know that the structures are in place to have something like that instituted right now, but maybe in the future. I'm curious to know whether that's something that you think could be useful, or might be, would it be net positive or net negative in your mind?
I think that would be super useful. I think there have been a few experiments with this. So if you look at Forefront, just created a terminal, and it's forefront.club, and then you can go to their terminal, and they actually have all of this super transparent data on the gender of contributors, on how much they're getting paid, on who's getting paid that much. So they have a bunch of data on that. And actually, a lot of DAOs have pretty publicly accessible data. I know index data is publicly accessible. It's really just a matter of aggregating it. I think Forefront is doing a fantastic job exploring what that might look like from a product perspective for themselves first. And I don't know if that's going to expand outside of Forefront, but I think there are a lot of opportunities to do that. I think that matters a lot when you think about making it easy for contributors to take the leap into DAOs, because you do want to make sure that they understand what their comp expectations are. But yeah, I think there's a lot of exploration here. I also know there are some DAO tools that are playing around with this. So I think this is something that we'll probably see sooner rather than later. And it's easier because a lot of this data is more accessible.
Absolutely. That's exciting to hear that there are people that are working on that and that are thinking similarly, because I think for people that we want to bring into DAOs, offering them that visibility will not only allow them to feel like there's more visibility, period, and transparency, but also be able to jump in and say, hey, I can do this. I understand the expectations. And it goes back to understanding expectations across the board. So that's good to hear. I guess my last question for you, which is not crypto related, is if you were to pill us on something that is not crypto, since I think we're far past that point already, what would you put us on to?
Ooh, that is such a good question. This is a hard question. I have to think about that. Oh, I have a dumb answer. I used to have a gallon-sized water bottle. I don't anymore because it is way too hard to travel with. But I would pill everyone who isn't traveling a bunch and or just works at home all day, which is everyone in crypto, to get a gallon-sized water bottle. Because being hydrated, I swear to God, changes your brain. I don't know. My brain is so much more effective when I'm hydrated. And a gallon-sized water bottle, I will like send you the Amazon link and you can link it in the podcast.
I will link it.
But that is totally what I would pill people on. It's very lame, but it's also really nice. And also the power of just carrying around a gallon of water. Like, you are never thirsty and it's amazing.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is you're teaching us how to be intimidating forces. 100%. And also staying hydrated.
And also contributing to DAOs. We're doing it all.
We're doing it all. We're going to be forces of nature. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on today. And where can people find you if they want to follow you?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Twitter at Chaser Chapman. It's Chase Chapman, but with an R in between. My middle name doesn't even start with an R. It was just for a vibe. And then I also have a podcast, which is called On the Other Side. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen.
This is great. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.